read and hear more about important news, events, and public policy debates at ncnewsline.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. As you've no doubt heard, legalized sports gambling arrived in North Carolina this past week, just in time for college basketball's March Madness. And while many are treating this news as a ho-hum development, there are a lot of observers and experts who have some profound concerns, and recently I caught up with one of them. Michelle L. Malkin is an assistant professor of criminal justice and criminology at East Carolina University in Greenville and the director of ECU's new gambling research and policy initiative. Malkin told me that while there are safety advantages that legal and regulated gambling provides over illegal and unregulated gambling, there are also reasons to be concerned that the new system will entrap a large number of people, particularly young men, in highly addictive behavior. Well, Professor Michelle Malkin, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
This is a whole new world is opening up in North Carolina with the advent of online sports gambling, something we've not had in any legal way ever before. And you're doing research on this, but your background is in criminology, right? Criminal justice. Talk to us about why all of a sudden you're now leading the gambling research and policy initiative at East Carolina University.
Well, even though I'm a professor of criminal justice and criminology, it's always been known that issues around addiction have been criminalized. So we've always been interested in substance use and abuse, and gambling actually falls right in that same category. So while there aren't a lot of criminologists interested in gambling behavior yet, hopefully that will change, it's not a far leap for somebody with my background. I also happen to be very interdisciplinary. I have degrees, my undergraduate degree is in sociology. I have a law degree. So it kind of all culminates together. I always had a kind of strong interest in understanding the behavior, risk, and outcomes of gambling and the kind of expansion of legalized gambling. And as I've kind of advanced my own research in this, I've learned a lot. And it's really changed how I thought of things. I actually thought expanding legalization was a problem at one point. But as I started to do the research, I realized many people were gambling, whether it was legal or not. Mm-hmm. And when it's not legal and not regulated, the implications can be very difficult for people who fall into either developing into having a gambling disorder or end up with ramifications that they don't feel like they can seek help for because it was an illegal form of gambling. So I've really kind of discovered that it's really important that we have legalized and regulated gambling rather than unregulated and illegal gambling, but that regulation comes with responsibility, and that responsibility is to ensure we have the education, outreach, treatment, and research necessary to understand how it's impacting our communities and be able to educate and do outreach before it becomes a problem, as well as be able to treat those people who do cross over into gambling disorder or have gambling-related harms.
So tell us how it's going to work. It's going to be on your phone. Actually, you can do it at certain physical facilities too, right?
So in North Carolina, you can already wager on sports at one of the brick-and-mortar casinos that are on the western side of the state, but that has been very limited. But what we know from the research is that people were already gambling using their cell phones. It was just offshore, not kind of being regulated by the state. So with the advent of this new law, people will have the option of a number of different industry providers to gamble in the comfort of their home or wherever they are. But also the legislation allows for additional sports books associated with different sports teams and athletic centers here in the state. And so people will be able to do in-person wagering as well as mobile and cellular.
I personally am an enormous sports fan. I've been watching sports my whole life, and I've been struck by how it seems that it is very rapidly changing the consumption of sports in America. There aren't just ads for gambling on the games. The reporters talk about what are the odds in the next quarter or the next period. And not for me, and I'm not particularly enjoying it, but I guess that's the way it's going to be. That's the new reality we face in the state.
It's a little unfortunate, especially for young people who are kind of building their love for the game to see that it is more than just a game in the sense that everybody's wagering on it and people aren't just loving the sport anymore. To be a spectator today for a lot of people means I put a bet on that team. And they feel like they have more buy-in behind what mm-hmm. happens, but also that means that people feel more loss when their team loses. And that can result in some negative things that can happen. There should still be a lot of space for people to just be supporting their favorite teams and not feel like they're being pushed to also wager on them.
I wonder very, very much about the fact that you say that, you know, people have always bet and we've always gambled. Maybe some of it was offshore, but this new ramping up to the point where it is becoming ubiquitous and we've got giant multinational corporations with incredible technology mm-hmm. and technological capability, the advertising potential, the power of going directly to people who have bet previously and just making them constant customers, that seems to me like a very profound risk. And I wonder if that's a concern you share.
Yeah, what we find from people who are seeking help for gambling is that some of the advertising can feel very overwhelming. It can lead people who don't want to bet to place that next bet because of a promise of a bonus or, you know, that their wagers are being kind of protected. And it's a way for industry to keep people gambling who wouldn't have necessarily continued to gamble. Right. And obviously, it's within the individual's decision to place a wager or not. But when somebody kind of crosses over into uncontrollable gambling or suffering from gambling-related harms or needs money because they lost at gambling, right. it's a lot easier to respond to an ad that's saying, hey, wager with us. You can win all that back and more. But what can also happen is they can lose even more and build that hole even deeper. So it's kind of difficult. A lot of people are able to enjoy gambling in a healthy way, and it's entertainment. But then there's other people who, whether it's because they had a big win and they just are chasing that win again, or they're financially strapped and they see gambling as the potential way out of that, or they've already crossed over into having some gambling-related harms. And actually, we know that brain chemistry has actually been impacted by their gambling. And so their ability to rationally think about when to stop, how much money to bet, what to do, has been diminished by their gambling disorder. And so ads and the marketing can really impact individuals who might be the most vulnerable. And that's also true about our young people. We know that emerging adults under the age of 25, I hate to say it, but their brains aren't fully developed right. yet. Not always.
Young college boys.
And they're less risk averse because that's natural in the growing process. And so they can be really swayed by some of this language. And especially if they learn about somebody who had a big win, then that can be a huge thing. But we see that the mobile apps feel a lot like video games. It plays like video games. It plays like social media. And so our young people are really comfortable with it. Right. And that can be dangerous because they can just keep wagering every second of the game. And suddenly they're no longer just a spectator. They're staring at their phones the whole time rather than enjoying the game anymore.
Yeah, I've read multiple reports of particularly young college age men who have blown the whole scholarship, blown all yeah. the money, already before they're even out of the school. We're talking with Michelle Malkin. She's a professor at East Carolina University, assistant professor of criminal justice and criminology. She's the director of the new Gambling Research and Policy Initiative. We've touched on the issue of advertising and the fact that this has such an impact. Now, there are these disclaimers, you know, we'll hear at the end where someone talks incredibly fast and says, "Have you ever call this 1-800, which seems to me, I find it remarkable that anybody, you'd have to be really bad shape to actually call that 800 number after hearing that solicitation. Isn't there something more we can do than that? That seems like a fig leaf in terms of what we can do to help prevent problem gambling. Isn't there yeah. some way maybe indeed we could regulate the advertising even? Has that ever been tried anywhere?
Well, some states are actually limiting what kind of advertising can go because it's impacting young people at such a high rate. They see kind of danger behind it. And, you know, we have limits on advertising around tobacco, around alcohol. So there's a lot of talk in different states and different places on limiting the kind of advertising that can happen, but that's not happening yet here in North Carolina.
Do you have any idea what it might look like? Is there ways we could, I mean, I guess we could just limit it to certain hours, or we could limit it to certain contexts, or maybe they could.
There could be an opt-in rather than opt-out of advertising, especially on your phone. So when you sign up, you could say, I want to be, you know, advertised to, or I don't, rather than the other way around. They can limit how much they can advertise on social media, how the algorithms work, things like that. I mean, there's a lot they can do. They have technology whizzes. But you're absolutely right. Like the whole, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or whatever the hotline is important. And some people do that. But usually individuals who are kind of really already facing gambling related harms, they can't stop. They need a bigger intervention. But the work that we need to be doing is actually before that. We need to be having more education and outreach to our youth, to our college students and emerging adults, to those who haven't yet even gambled, to understand what it looks like when gambling is no longer just a game. And so what that means is we have some great programming here happening out of the Department of Health and Human Services around education of our youth, but there's not enough funds to really put that out, and it's not part of the general curriculum of our schools. But if we can teach people how gambling is a risk and how to have a healthy relationship with money and when to and not to engage in certain kinds of behaviors, that could make a big difference. You know, just teaching a young person that as soon as you start gambling, keep a log of wins and losses. Mm-hmm. Make sure those wins are outweighing the losses. And when you start to see the losses outweighing it, you need to start questioning that. That's a simple thing somebody could do early on. Also, a lot of these apps have these opportunities for what they call like positive play. Like people can set limits for the day or the month on how much they can gamble. And once they hit those limits, they can't keep gambling. So we should educate people early to use those so that they can gamble, but make sure they're not losing more than they can afford to lose. And then, of course, there's other ways to limit your access to gambling. But our goal is to really ensure that people who are engaging in gambling can do so in a healthy way. And we have not educated people even in terms of knowing when it looks like they may have a problem or a loved one does.
You know, I spent many years as a consumer advocate for people who were falling into predatory lending. They ended up behind on their paycheck. Mm-hmm. The next thing you know, they had a series of 300% payday loans. And what the industry would say is, well, you know, we need better consumer education about how to, sometimes my reply was, sometimes we just don't need to have 300% loans be legal in a society. Yeah. And I wonder again, if there isn't limits that we'll ultimately find ourselves needing to place on this. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously we want everybody to be educated, everybody to be responsible, but I'm sure your research shows that a lot of people just are never going to get to that point, that just as they never get to the point where they really know how to manage money or become, intelligent borrowers. And so it seems to me that that there still might be a role for maybe a more robust regulatory agency in North Carolina. These industries are massive corporations with incredible resources, and a couple of people at the Department of Health and Human Services doesn't sound to me like they'd be much of a match for that.
Yeah. North Carolina legislature did something great by putting some money to DHHS, mm-hmm. but that was not enough. It can be as much as $250,000 to treat just 100 to 125 individuals, especially because insurance companies don't even cover gambling at the same rate that they do other addictions. So we need a lot of money. And the other thing is the legislation didn't include anything on research. I mean, it was truly because DHHS understands that how are they going to treat those people most vulnerable if they don't know who they are and where they are. And so research is important, but they can't fully fund a full research agenda that we need. So as the legislature continues to consider more legislation around gambling, they need to be thinking about all four needs: outreach and education, treatment, and research. And that needs to be part of the agenda going forward with more money, because the reality is they're getting a lot of money from the taxes. It's not costing them anything to do this. Right. It's taking a drop in the bucket of what they're making to use towards other purposes and saying some people who gamble will suffer from gambling related harms. Therefore, we need to try to prevent that from happening and be there for when it does happen. And that's the responsibility side of all this.
We're coming to the end of our time with Professor Michelle Malkin of East Carolina University, the head of the Gambling Research and Policy Initiative. A couple questions still occur to me. One is, has anybody ever done any estimate? I mean, I see we're going to get some tax revenues out of this, but of course, that's premised on the notion that we're going to be sending an awful lot of money, I guess, out of state to large multinational corporations. Mm-hmm. Where are they based in Nevada, or where are they all? Where are Caesars and these companies that are inundating our TVs these days? Where are they all based?
All the sports books are all over the place, honestly. Yeah. They're housed in different places. They're based in different places. A lot of them are multinational, right, and have several places. I mean, there are some housed in Nevada, a good mm-hmm. number of them, but not all of them. There's no one state or one entity that's kind of gaining the most out of this. Mm-hmm. But we do have some pretty big players that were accepted here in North Carolina. And even those they're not specifically based. When you were talking about like Caesars and MGM, yes, yeah, they're headquartered in, you know, Las Vegas, but many aren't.
I guess one final question. Talk to us about if you have any basic advice for people as they want to try this and have no idea about how to go about it. Do you have any initial warnings and advice for people as this new world opens in North Carolina?
I do. I think that it's really important that people see gambling as a form of entertainment the same way they would to going to a movie or eating out for a meal. And so they budget it in. And when that budget is used up, that's when you stop gambling. And that they really keep track of how much they're winning versus how much they're losing. And to understand that a win doesn't mean the next win is right around the corner. It benefits industry. That's why they do it. So there is some skill involved, but you always have the opportunity of chance and things happening. And so you can't say I can be perfect at gambling in any form of gambling. But the most important thing we can do for individuals is to help them identify when it is they or a loved one might be starting to fall down the path of a problem. And the big things, warning signs, are lying about where they are or how much they lost, chasing losses, kind of trying to go more often and engaging wagering more and more often. There are a number of things you can do to protect yourself, which is make sure if you share an account with people, you actually check that account regularly and have the conversations early. If your loved one is going to start engaging in gambling and they're excited about it, make sure it stays exciting. If they're starting to get really moody or money becomes an issue, start to have that conversation early instead of waiting. Because once somebody becomes desperate, we know that bad things can happen. 1 in 5 people with gambling disorder will attempt suicide. We want to save lives, so we want to stop people from actually crossing that path.
It's a daunting task you've carved out for yourself to be the expert in this area, but we desperately need your work. So keep it up, and thank you so much for all you're doing. Michelle Malkin's an East Carolina University Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Criminology. She's the Director of the Gambling Research and Policy Initiative at ECU. You can find her at ecu.edu. Thank you, Michelle. I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk again real soon.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncnewsline.com. You can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries wherever you get your podcasts. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views, a weekly look at state news, events, and public policy debates produced by North Carolina Newsline. Visit them online at ncnewsline.com.